Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
You're listening to Ian Stone's Comedy Breakfast, the podcast edition. I'm here on Love Sport Radio every weekday morning at 6:30. This morning I was joined by the former West Ham and Ireland striker, David Connolly.
Good morning, you got here. It's like alarm issue, but you know what? David ran from wherever, the station, and then was sick outside. You haven't quite got the fitness you used to have, I'm guessing. But you're not 100%, you said.
No,
Well, well done for getting in. I mean, seriously, I'm not even joking.
I think you are.
Keep away from me.
I don't know if anyone's been ill, but basically everyone I know's had something.
Right.
Just got the tail end of it.
You're all right?
Yep.
Okay, lovely. We're doing the newspapers, right?
Yeah.
We've just been going through. We talked about Tottenham last night. It didn't even show it on Sky. They showed the Man City game.
Which I imagine is because they didn't, for a start, know whether the game was going to be going ahead there because of all the FA Cup complications. And Sky like to sort out their TV games quite early, don't they? So I imagine when it was sorted out probably a month or so ago, that game wasn't definitely going to be going ahead and that new stadium.
You're absolutely right. But does it actually matter? I mean, I guess it does. But in the end, we know what the viewers want. And I mean, listen, I'm an Arsenal fan. I don't need to see Tottenham having a great time at their new stadium. But the truth is, It's a historic event. It's a momentous event. This is one of the best stadiums in the world opening up. This is a game where there's something riding on it. I mean, obviously there's something riding on Man City and Cardiff as well. But it was such a training game, Man City.
Oh yeah. If they could have just picked the game the day before, then obviously they would have gone for the Spurs game. That's what people wanted to see.
About 3 weeks ago, that Tottenham game was happening on that night.
Too late by then.
Is it?
Logistics. The wheels were in motion for the Man City Cardiff game.
Wheels are in motion. Okay.
Anyway, let's talk briefly about that game then, because that is in the back pages. Comfortable for Manchester City.
It was.
Topsy-turvy is the headline in the back of the Sun, because Man City go back above Liverpool. With all the games on TV, they very, very rarely play at the same time, don't they? So you get the feeling it's going to be whoever plays first goes top for a while, and then the next one goes top. But
psychologically, David, when you're in that position, I mean, you've never been in that position, being top of the league, but you understand. Sorry, that was a dig, and I didn't mean it to be. What I mean is,
Has Arsenal? No, they haven't either. Not for a long time.
When you're in that position where the other team, let's say you're going for a position and the other team is playing first, is it better to play second or is it better to play first?
Oh, I'd always rather play first. Always, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I just think there is something in that. But we've seen plenty of teams falter when they've gone early, had the opportunity, I'm sure. I think Liverpool played early once a good few weeks ago.
I think they had a chance. I mean, the truth is they're both in that position, because when Liverpool play Man City atop and when Man City play Liverpool atop, so they're both having to suffer with it as well. And I guess we'll see who blinks first. They've got, six games to go, the pair of them?
I mean, they had a nice one, didn't they, obviously, against Cardiff. Even Neil Warnock, before the game, was saying, I'm going to play basically the under-23s.
Mm. If this is
less than 10... I'll be happy, you know.
He didn't in the end. In the end, he only made one change. And like he said, after the game, it could have been a lot worse. After that first goal went in really early, you did fear for them a bit. You thought they could get a hatful. So as it happened, Warnock was quite pleased that he managed to keep it down to just the two
smiling
goals.
Smiling and joking afterwards. You see, there was Etheridge and De Bruyne having a laugh, and Warnock's in between them. And I thought, you know what? It's nice to see Neil Warnock not staring down the referee.
But this game was irrelevant for them, though, right? They were always going to lose this game.
It's a gimme.
It's the one before that. That was the key one with the referee decisions.
Yeah. No, quite. And obviously Warnock is, maybe over that, maybe not. But I don't think Warnock expected much, and he didn't get much, did he? They're hardly in Man City's half.
Do you reckon he's trying to unsettle Man City a bit? Not that it massively would, by saying that he's going to make loads of changes, play the under-23s. But he actually only made one change from the game against Chelsea.
Do you know what? They said that. I read that. They're trying to unsettle Man City. I just think he was having a laugh. I think Neil Warnock's got a bit of a sense of humour, and he thought, you know what? There's nothing I can do. And they asked him, and he goes, I think I'll play the under-23s.
Well,
just
also,
a bit of a joke.
If you read his whole conference, what he said is basically a dig at the referees. you know, it was alluding to the referees, but really that's what it was about, you know, in terms of getting their decisions. What's the point? I might as well play the 23s because we probably won't get a decision.
Well,
like
that wasn't
we did
actually,
at the weekend.
That wasn't reported like that. But you know what? It didn't really matter. He's not like going to get the ball anyway draw fails from Man City.
Few questions for Guardiola to answer now in terms of their left back. Zinchenko went off with a hamstring injury.
Yeah.
So he could bring in Danilo, play him out of position at left back.
Which is what he did last night.
Which is what he did when Zinchenko was injured. Or he could bring back Benjamin Mendy, who of course is a little bit out of favour after he turned up, or he was pictured, videoed at 3 o'clock in the morning at a nightclub before he went to the Anthony Joshua against Povetkin fight and was 3 hours late for training the next day. So he's had a couple of things with Guardiola. Mm. And Guardiola said, look, he's an adult. I've got to let my players go out and do their own, live their lives. But this is the second time, so he seems to be out of favour. He wasn't in the 18 yesterday, but now I'd have to potentially bring him back in or play Danilo out of position.
Mm.
Do you have any of that, David, when you were playing? Any players who, you know, went out too much, got in late and had to be dropped? I mean, I'm sure you were the model professional yourself, but...
Well, obviously not if I'm late. well, I think that, you know, it happens. Look, it happens all over in a lot of clubs.
In a lot of workplaces. And this, again, this is not a dig. Is it, were you out dancing last night? I'm just... No. But... it does happen all over. It does. It's not just about football. People are late for work and people maybe don't behave quite like they should. But at the same time, you sort of expect athletes to get the rest that they need. He's out till 3:30 dancing. Yeah. It's not ideal.
Well, I mean, I remember when I was a very young pro, I stayed over with my parents and then drove to meet the bus at Watford. And I was on the way, but I was going to be a little bit late. And Kenny Jackett was the manager, who's now obviously Portsmouth manager. Got there, the bus was gone. And that was it. Tough. You know, you missed the bus. And then a good few years later, I was at Sunderland and Roy Keane was the manager. And we had to meet the bus. You know, got there, met the bus. And then whatever time we're meant to leave, you know, say on the dot, bus pulls out, two lads come screaming in about 100 miles an hour in the car. And they were both late. And even though they'd saw them, they pulled into the car park, bus didn't stop, just carried on. And that was Roy's way. You know, if you were late, you were late. And that was it. The bus went without you. And that
a bit
was
ridiculous when they can see the cars, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Make it a point, I suppose, though, isn't it? If you're late, then you're not coming.
Hey, and the funny thing is, I think it was, he's now passed away, sadly, Liam Miller and Anthony Stokes, but they said the gates on their house, because it was cold, it was whatever time, January, they'd frozen, so he couldn't get out. it was brilliant.
Yeah. That's the problem we all have, when the gates freeze.
Yep.
Because what you've got to do is send the servants up a mile up the drive to go and get some antifreeze and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, in the end...
He had to smash them up.
Yeah, I know, it's ridiculous. Listen, you must take the next thing I'm saying with a pinch of salt, and this is not about you, but I cannot abide lateness, right? I cannot. It does my head in. I just think to myself, you're being rude. You are being... Why are you... what about everyone else? I know your time is precious. What about our time?
Well, Roy, for example, would be standing at the window of his office, and that would be his thing. He would be looking at what time people got in, you know, and that was his app. Everyone has a bugbear, right? They have something. For him, didn't matter what else, it, you know. And you know,
I'm with Roy. Well, I am absolutely with
Roy.
The
only thing is that can cloud things in some ways, because we had one lad who knew that, for example, that was Roy's little thing. And he made sure he was always on time, you know, dotted the I's, crossed the T's, and that's fine. Like everyone, you know, but I guess...
What's wrong with that then? Sorry.
Well, then in the end, I think Roy then selected him above other players because he felt, you know, he was always...
Oh, I see.
You know, in on time, doing everything
right. Teacher's pet.
A little bit of a teacher's pet. And I think that can kind of... Whereas others are like, well, you know, I trust that they will be in on time. They're professionals. And I'll gauge everything. You know, I'll have a rounded picture. Whereas for Roy, it was very much so... Yeah. If you're on time in the morning.
Well, that's a bit nuts. I wouldn't pick someone for a team based purely on their timekeeping.
They've I'm not saying it was based purely, but what I'm saying is it had quite a lot of weight.
Look, you know what? I've had fallings out with people who have been late for meetings that I've had, you know, because I just go, hang on a minute, my time's not as precious as yours. Now, Benjamin Mendy, there is a bit of that about him. Listen, he's an outstanding player. Is he fit? That's my question. Is he actually fit to play?
Why is he dancing with that knee anyway?
Well, exactly. But
he's been declared fully fit, yeah. but he didn't make the 18 last night. And but Guardiola hasn't fined him. But you get the feeling that Guardiola is the sort of manager, as most managers are, who do take the timekeeping seriously.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see whether he picks him in the next game.
The only thing is, when you're part of a football club and a football team, and you've got meeting after meeting after meeting and training and this and that, and it can become very wearing if you've got a manager who is so anal about lots of things. And I found it creates a bit of a stressful environment to be in, you know. And I don't think the managers, for example, should overly worry too much about that and delegate that. It could be the captain, it could be someone else. But my point about Roy is that he took a lot on that. It really affected a lot of things,
you know,
around
what,
the football club.
You know what? You're probably right about Roy Keane in that particular case. In terms of Pep Guardiola, they're going for 4 trophies. They're having an absolutely fantastic season. Everyone seems fairly relaxed about it. But Mendy's got to get his arse in gear, and he's got to be ready for Wednesday if they're going to play him against Spurs.
Love sports.
Yeah. That is Ed Sheeran.
Is it Ed Sheeran?
With Castle on the Hill.
All right.
He's back in the news, his old Ed.
Is this about his swimming pool in the back garden, which is not a swimming pool?
Not a swimming pool.
But a nature reserve.
Don't call it that. It's for newts.
A nature reserve with lanes and a diving board and sun loungers around the outside.
Yeah, it's got a special hut for newts to change after they've had a swim.
Newts,
that's what it's for. Newts, frogs. That's what he said.
Do you know the joke? Man walks into a bar with a newt on his shoulder and he goes, can I have a beer for me and a vodka and tonic for Tiny? And he goes, Tiny? Why do you call him Tiny? Because he's my newt. It's one of my favourite gags. Anyway, go on.
Anyway, so basically Ed Sheeran isn't allowed to build a swimming pool near his house. So what he did was build what looks like a pool, but he said it was for nature. So he said, it's for frogs, and that meant he was allowed to do it. And it was investigated, and then they said, all right, fair enough, we've got no evidence that you've been swimming in it, despite the fact that it's got a beach and it's got steps down into it for the frogs and newts.
For your slightly older and infirm frogs who need to step down.
And a caravan.
A caravan?
Well,
that's slightly unusual.
Yeah, well,
most swimming pools I've been to don't have caravans.
No, it's like a traveller-style, sort of cool-looking...
For changing.
Changing, yeah.
Right, for the frogs to change.
Yeah. So he's in trouble again for that. Well, first it was the pool, and for some reason the council decided that it was fair enough, and because they never saw him swimming in it, so they said there's no evidence to do anything about it. But now people have complained about the changing room and said that this hut... He doesn't have planning permission for that, so that'll have to be torn down.
Right.
Who's saying this? Because I saw the pictures, I mean, there's like no one within a mile.
There is that.
You know,
he's got a big garden.
He's got a big garden.
These neighbours.
Just get lost, you know. Go and do something else. They've got more time on their, too much time on their hands.
Do you know what? I have, to a certain extent, I have sympathy with that view. But on the other hand, he wasn't meant to have, because they're worried about noisy pool parties late at night, I'm guessing.
What, in the middle of that field?
It's like
Glastonbury. You've seen the size of it. It's
massive.
Huge.
His garden is enormous. Anyway, it'll go on.
Yeah.
That argument?
It will go on, yeah. The concerns that he's trying to have parties, a wild lifestyle rather than actual wildlife.
Ed Sheeran. Ed Sheeran. You look fit, Ed. Have you been swimming? No. No, never go swimming. Yeah, oh, yeah. At my local baths. Yeah. £3.40.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stick me towel in a locker.
I've been rearing toads in my back garden.
Excuse me. Okay, go on.
That's what he's claiming anyway. Another story here about Harry Maguire.
Oh, this is funny, isn't it?
No, yeah.
Exactly 9 months to the day after England beat Colombia.
Correct.
His missus has given birth to little Harry. Hopefully the head wasn't that big, because otherwise that would hurt.
Oh, that would be that would be a tough one.
There it is.
Is he
cesarean, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. I have no idea, and I'd rather not go into it. But anyway, 9 months to the day after we beat Colombia.
Yeah, his fiance posted a picture on Instagram. little Lily Saint.
Lily Saint Maguire.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah.
9 months. How much did it weigh? Because that's what you always ask.
It doesn't actually say how much it weighed.
It's always pounds, isn't it, by the way? It's never kilos.
You can tell Jamie doesn't have a choice how much it weighed. What? How much the baby weighed?
The baby. Well, yeah. You can say it about a baby, can't you?
You don't really say it. It's like an inanimate object. You don't say that about a human being, do you?
Well, I just did.
The it.
I just did. And you know what? The sky hasn't fallen in.
Okay, anyway. I don't know how much she weighed.
Yes.
There you go.
But 9 months. And I think they thought there's going to be a bit of a baby boom around this time.
And
9 months after the success of the penalties,
you're through at the quarterfinals, love. You're in luck.
Yeah, pretty much.
Really?
I'm not sure if there has been, but that was what they were saying. Yeah, they could expect around this time.
Most men I know would have been in no fit state to manage anything after celebrating England's penalty victory over Colombia, I would suggest.
That is true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Burglar got caught. He left a sweaty sock at the scene of the crime in the house. What is he thinking?
Well, you take your socks off.
Well, why did he do that?
I don't know. I want to be more comfortable. It was because if you're burgling somewhere, you would be sweating a little bit more. So maybe his feet got a little bit itchy, and he thought, "I'll take my socks off," but he left them there.
Yeah.
And he got caught, did he?
Oh, did he take his shoes off then? Didn't want to leave footprints, maybe.
They do sometimes take the shoes off, don't they? But what I'm wondering is how they was it the DNA of the sock?
DNA in the sweaty sock.
Really?
Yeah.
And they managed to match it with his.
Yeah.
Okay, well, wow. That's
I know.
Very impressive.
Yeah, I still don't see why you would need to take this sock off.
No, me neither. No, but anyway, that'll teach him.
He's learned his lesson, yeah.
That'll teach him. Is he some sort of Buddhist burglar?
Could be.
I'm just wondering.
Could be. It was in South Wales.
Maybe he just wanted he saw the white carpet as he came in. He went, oh, I better take my shoes and socks off. Don't want to make a mess. Leave footprints all over it.
Nice courteous burglar. You don't get many of them, do
you? No, you don't. No. I mean, you should get a bit of time off for that.
Yeah. Judge will have to take that into account. But anyway, yeah, he's been caught. He'll learn his lesson. Tarantulas, would you ever eat them?
What?
They're a delicacy in the Philippines.
Do you know what? I always wonder about this. You know, when I was in Thailand, they were serving up locusts, I think it was, and they used to put them on a griddle. And I always just think, do they do this just for idiot tourists? Oh, yes, eat the locusts. We love eating locusts here. And then you eat the locusts and they're laughing at you. And I sort of feel the same about tarantulas. No, I don't want to eat tarantulas. I mean, they're hairy as well. I imagine you shave them. Do you shave them first?
Pre-shaved tarantulas.
Yeah, I don't know. Would I eat a tarantula? I don't.
No.
I mean, if somebody just gave me something and I went, oh, that's nice, what is it? And they went, it's tarantula. I wouldn't think, oh, I must spit it out. But I don't really fancy it. No, not really.
No. I'm not sure how they're cooked. But anyway, they're a delicacy in the Philippines. Right. And the 750 live ones were smuggled from Poland to the Philippines.
Right.
And they were caught. They were smuggled them in little tea bags. I don't know how many per tea bag. Maybe one per tea bag, like a little suitcase for
quite big tarantulas.
Yeah.
Quite a big spider. I don't think I'd really want to eat spiders. I mean, God, if I find one in the bath, I get a glass and I chuck it out of the window and make sure it's fine.
Make sure it's safe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm not sure about eating them.
No.
No.
No, okay. Well, yeah.
Poached, I think.
No one's going
to. If I was going to do one, I'd have it poached.
No one's going to force you to eat them. But,
okay.
Poland to the Philippines in a tea bag.
It's odd. The whole story is odd. I'm not sure I want to eat one. Would you eat one? Would you?
No.
I've never eaten locusts or anything, though. Did you get involved in that in Thailand?
No, I didn't. I just saw other people eating them. Mm. And I thought, I'm not having them. They're locusts.
Try everything once, I think.
Yeah, well, except for locusts and tarantulas, is what I would say. Got any more stories?
I'll have some more after 8 o'clock. After 8:30.
After 8 o'clock. So in the past. Okay.
This is Love Sport.
Some more stuff from the back pages. We didn't really talk about Chelsea. Of course, they played last night, winning 3-0 against Brighton, putting Brighton a little bit more in danger. So they're right in the mix of it. As for Chelsea, Callum Hudson-Odoi starting his first Premier League game. That's probably the biggest talking point of the game. Did well. Set up Olivier Giroud for the first goal.
Yeah.
Beat his man and then put in a nice low cross for Giroud, who actually did really well just to flick it with the outside of his foot
really
into the
good
roof.
At that.
Yeah.
Giroud, he loves a flick finish like that. I mean, I've seen him do it a load of times, coming across at the front post. He's got big, great feet for a big man, as they often say. But Callum Hudson-Odoi being the headline there, isn't it? Just because he started a game.
Well, Giroud, isn't Giroud out of contract? Is he out of contract in the summer? Yeah.
I think he'd be leaving at the end of the season.
Yeah. Hey, but one person who wasn't watching was Abramovich. I don't know if you've seen that in terms of
not buying executive boxes.
Not buying executive
boxes. Have you seen that story?
Yeah, so first time in 10 years he hasn't bought an executive box at Chelsea. I mean, sort of says it all, really, doesn't it? He's not. Is he allowed in the country properly now? He's not, is he?
Well, I think it's difficult for him.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not. He can't just come and go as he pleases.
He needs a visa, doesn't he?
Yeah, I believe he does.
Well, he wants to sell it, doesn't he? So.
I think he does, but he wants to get the right price. There was talk about selling it to Jim Ratcliffe, wasn't there?
Yeah.
He's just bought the Sky Ineos, the chemical guy. Who's
that's what he likes to be called, actually.
Hey, it's the chemical guy. Do you know what? I wouldn't mind being called the chemical guy. That sounds great. But anyway, he is talking about selling it, and he hasn't turned up at a single home game this season.
I think the parent company that owe him something like $1.25 billion. That's a lot, isn't it?
Chelsea.
Yeah.
Yeah, but is he gonna get that back? Because,
well, exactly.
I don't think it was about that, was it, with Abramovich? I know we are talking about him like he's sort of over, but it was never about that. I don't think it was about making profit. It was about basically having an entree into Western society and securing himself so that Vladimir Putin didn't put him Siberian salt mine for 14 years.
I just wonder if, for example,
isn't that basically the way it works? Because to be honest, the oligarchs who have been the oligarchs who've spoken out, Khodorkovsky was in jail for 10 years. Berezovsky is dead. I mean, this. You know what? I think Abramovich has played it quite well. He's basically said, Putin said, you can keep your money, but don't you dare speak out against me. So he's just basically kept very quiet, bought a football club, and he suddenly,
kept
his head down and just got on with spending money on players, but he ain't getting that money back.
Well, no, I think he's going to have to write off an awful lot. And would you be willing, if the country where you didn't put so much money and said, basically, you can't come here anymore, would you be like, well, okay, I'll just write that off, or would you want to be paid something back?
Well, you know what, I had another $8 billion, I'd think to myself, you know what, I'll live without the other billion, because I've still got me two yachts and I've still got my family.
Would you? You'd write off a billion, let's be honest, that's a lot of money.
Well, I mean, what are you going to do?
You ain't getting that back.
The point is, he has no choice. So, but anyway, he's not going to Chelsea very much at the moment.
And he's not going much.
He's missing Callum Hudson-Odoi and back to the football. Loftus-Cheek playing very well.
Yeah, Riyath Al-Samarai, writing in the Mail, says it wasn't the sort of performance of Hudson-Odoi that make you think he should be playing every week. There were some errors there, but as you'd expect from an 18-year-old. But on the whole, he's a bright spark and he was able to unlock the defence. And when you got a team like Brighton or like some of the lower teams in the Premier League sitting behind the ball, Chelsea this season have often found that a bit difficult to break down.
Yes.
So someone like him as a potential option. Another option now, they've got Pedro, Willian, Hazard. Now they've got Hudson-Odoi, who's
a bit late though, isn't it? I mean, started the Community Shield.
Yeah.
And it's taken him until, April? A month left to start a Premier League game.
Sarri's finally admitted that he thinks he's ready now.
He's so stubborn, isn't he? That's been his problem. It's been his problem with Jorginho and Kante and obviously Hudson-Odoi. I mean, how can you wait till April?
They've got to be
stubborn. Premier League start.
They've got to be stubborn, though, haven't they? Because there's so much noise. You know, a couple of games are lost and suddenly he doesn't know what he's doing. You've got the fans singing it. And you have to have some faith in your own abilities. I think he's waited too long. But I think it's partly, and we said this the other day, it's a factor of what happened with Kepa. And the fact that the player basically won out over the manager and he thought, well, that is not happening again. And I don't care if there are 20,000 fans singing, I don't know what I'm doing. I am not playing him until I think he's ready and possibly even beyond that. And that's what he's done.
Yeah, I think the problem that Chelsea fans had was he wasn't getting any sort of game. I mean, you look at Phil Foden, who's in a similar sort of position. Perhaps you'd say that Man City's midfield have got more experience and better players than Chelsea, as in Callum Hudson-Odoi. Hudson-Odoi is closer to the wingers who are starting for Chelsea than Foden is. But actually, no one's really saying to Pep Guardiola, you need to play Foden more. But he is getting more of a game in the cup competitions.
I think he's handling Foden very well, much better than Sarri is handling Hudson-Odoi.
Well, look, I think Hudson-Odoi isn't far off Willian, for example, based on Willian's form this season.
And
he
might be better than Pedro, now, because Pedro hasn't done anything.
I think Foden is a terrific player, but he's still
not David Silva and Bernardo Silva, is he?
No.
No, I would agree. But, you know, Pep seems to be handling it very well. Anyway, he finally made his Premier League debut last night at Hudson-Odoi, and they won 3-0.
And he got a nice assist. Yeah, the story in the back page of the Mail today, United's rude awakening before Wolves' loss. Now, you often hear about Champions League games, don't you, that European ultras outside hotels banging drums and that waking players up. United were woken up from their afternoon nap, apparently, by two hotel fire alarms in the space of about half an hour. They're staying at an £85 a night four-star hotel in Wolverhampton.
Right.
And as is customary before evening games, they had a nap. Did you always have a nap, David?
Well, we would be encouraged to have a nap. And yes, at times I would have a nap. And it can be really annoying. This can really, you know, put you off your stride.
I have a nap every day.
Yeah.
Mm. Always have a nap.
I regularly
before
have a nap.
Gigs. Mm. I absolutely love my
can't
nap.
Can't beat a nap, can you?
You can't beat a nap.
Well, Stoney was saying to me, you've got to start doing that. And I said, no, because when you wake up then, you know, you just feel awful for a good few hours. I have done it once or twice. But actually, one of the funniest naps I used to have is at Upton
one
Park.
One of the funniest naps?
Yeah.
How well, I can't wait. Well, I mean, I've got loads of funny nap stories, but I'm waiting for this one.
This is a
what's
good one.
What's this funny nap story? Let me tell you about this nap I had.
Well, at Upton Park, there was a hotel. And
all right.
We used to have I drive there early, have a nap at Upton Park, you know, and then you get ready for the game. But obviously, every, you know, couple of hours, they ding something through the tannoy, but it comes straight in your room.
Oh, you're joking.
So, no. So, I think that lasted like once or twice, and then that was me done. Oh, then I went to another local hotel.
How rubbish
don't,
is that?
Don't have a nap
fire
there.
Alarms, I mean, honestly, I really do need my nap. I mean, unless, even when a fire alarm goes off, nobody ever goes down to the lobby, do they?
They're no,
just,
no.
You know.
Well, I had one hotel once, and everyone went down to the outside, and women in full makeup, with all their belts on, they'd taken about 20 minutes to get down there.
All their belts on?
Well, you know, they're in their dress and a belt and all sorts.
How many belts do they have?
Well, I think Jamie got down early thinking, hopefully they're down in their underwear.
I was down in my pyjamas. It was only me and a couple of old biddies in the pyjamas. Everyone else was done up to the nines just to go down 4 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, fully packed, yeah.
Yeah, no, well, no, anyway.
Anyway, United's players at 2:30 and 3 o'clock in the afternoon had to go down because of the fire alarm.
That is a pain.
Disaster. No wonder. Maybe that contributes.
It's not as bad as a 4 o'clock fire alarm, though, is it? I mean, it's an afternoon nap.
You know what? It really, you know
but
what?
You know what? They're on a grueling schedule, right? When you're playing as many games as you are, you know, you need your rest. So that's obviously deliberate, just to, you know,
it
put
really makes a difference. It genuinely makes a difference. And if I don't get a nap, if something affects me in that way, I can be a bit grouchy. Now, obviously, it's different when you're doing stand-up comedy.
Could you be grouchy? I don't think Stoney could be grouchy.
Obviously, you can go on stage. I'm just going to let that slide. You can just go on stage and moan at the audience. That's what's up, which is fine. But if you're doing a physical job like playing in Premier League football, you need all the energy you can. And maybe that would have affected them. Wolves certainly look good, by the way.
Some clubs, obviously put a lot of stock in that, right? I mean, you meet in the morning, you park your car at the stadium, you then all go together on a bus, you get your sleep. I mean,
you know,
because you can't be getting to a stadium, which often happens. I mean, United have had that quite a lot, haven't they? Getting to stadiums late under Mourinho.
Getting to their own
stadium. Getting to their own one, yeah.
Yeah, that's not good.
And obviously they've got the hotel right beside them.
Yeah,
which they don't use.
Okay, what else you got, Jamie?
Yeah, there is a story about Keaton Jennings in the paper. He's been chatting. Yeah, I felt a bit sorry for old Keaton.
You know what, did you feel in any way guilty?
No, I didn't feel guilty.
Because I read that and I thought of you straight away. I thought, yeah, he's talking about Jamie here. Because Keaton Jennings was talking about how, you know, when you read the stuff in the newspapers and you hear the stuff on Love Sport Radio, that's what he said. Yeah. And Jamie says horrible things about me. And honestly, it really upsets me.
For a start, I didn't say anything horrible about him. I said he was struggling in the winter, which he was. And yeah, he's basically saying, yeah, he walks into a room and he thinks that everyone...
Is Jamie there going to give me looks, give me the evil eye from my batting, which I thought was quite good, but apparently he isn't.
He walks into a room and he thinks, oh, everyone must be thinking about my cover drive. And then you realise that actually everyone's thinking about their own day. They're not worrying about him. But he says it has got him down, but the love of his family has helped him get through a difficult winter, which did make me feel a little bit sorry for him.
Of yourself.
Bully.
Bullying in the workplace, isn't it?
It has happened here with you two, 2v1 against me.
No,
I know
deserved
that, the bullying in
Keaton
the workplace.
Keaton Jennings, on the other hand, he's such a lovely guy as well and one of the most naturally talented batsmen.
Yes, well, he should have scored more runs. But anyway, he's been told that he'll get a chance.
Can't help himself, can he? Can't help
himself. He'll get a chance for England if he scores a load more runs in the beginning of the season. I mean, I think it's an obvious one, really. You had Joe Denley coming in and opening the batting.
James Vince is trying.
He's having
Jason
a go opening.
Jason Roy, there's a few of them, aren't there?
Jason Roy, I think, would be a good shout. Because Australia will probably pick David Warner for the Ashes. An opener who just...
Yeah. I think we should just do that every time we mention David Warner's name. Mind you, he's probably having sleepless nights worrying about what we're saying about him.
Yeah, he probably is. Yeah, he's shed a tear or two in his time as well.
Quite fragile, aren't they?
Yeah. Jason Roy, similar sort of batsman
Love
in a way.
Love Sport, get me, mate. Horrible people on Love Sport. Give me a hard time.
Jason Roy... likes to play his shots. Obviously, a one-day batsman, opening batsman, similar sort of thing. You could just stick him out there to open in the test stuff and say, just play your shots, mate. James Vince also in the running. Alistair Cook has said he won't be coming back unless it's an absolute emergency. If Keaton Jennings does score a load of runs early on in the season, then he might get picked again and we might not have seen him for the last time in an England shirt. But we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, he's been talking on their media day saying that he's found it tough and he's going to try and bounce back.
This is Lancashire's media day. Yeah. Right, OK. Yeah. And Alistair Cook was there, wasn't he?
Alistair Cook was there. He keeps being asked, and every time...
Alistair Cook wasn't there. No.
Not Lancashire's media day, no.
Who was there? The bowler. Jimmy Anderson was there.
Oh, he'd have been there, yeah.
Yes, he was. Okay. Well, anyway, he's not coming back, Alistair Cook.
No.
So he says. And listen, as much as we'd like him to, it would be more elegant if he doesn't. That's the truth.
But have you seen, I think he makes a good point. I think it's Atherton says that, you know, why didn't he just take a sabbatical? You know, and maybe come back refreshed. I think there's something in that.
Yeah.
Rather than retire. I mean, look, he's scoring
he
runs for
play
fun.
Anymore. He didn't want to play test cricket anymore.
Yeah, but maybe he never actually thought of having a sabbatical. You know, there's nothing wrong. Look, plenty of people do that in other lines of work, don't they?
You know what? He played 116 tests, 115 in a row or something like that. Maybe he just thought, enough.
He said he didn't. He wasn't batting as well. I think mentally.
He wasn't, was he?
No, we were talking about saying,
should he really? Does he really warrant his place in the team?
It was almost a case of jumping before he was pushed.
I think
A lot of people are talking about whether he deserved this place.
Look, you two, stop agreeing. You just agree with each other. That's all you do. You know, I mean, he's talking here that who would he rather have, for example? Would he rather have Alistair Cook or someone else in based on their form? And. It'd be Cook at the minute.
Yeah, there's no doubt that Michael Atherton and most England cricket fans would like Alistair Cook to still be playing. But I wouldn't want to pressurise him in any way. If he doesn't want to, he doesn't want to.
I mean, perhaps now, looking back at it, sabbatical might have been a better option. But at the time, people were saying, you know, should he even be opening the batting for England? And he's getting on a bit. And then he's not thinking, oh, you know, a year off and then I'll be perfect for England again. Everyone's thinking, well, it's time to give the young guys a go.
Steve Bruce. Who obviously had a sabbatical, didn't he? We saw him at the cricket in Barbados or whatever. He wanted some time off. He's come back refreshed. I know he's not a player. He's a manager.
Different,
but still,
though,
Sheffield Wednesday are doing very well under him. Unbeaten.
Different, though, isn't it, when you're playing?
Well, yeah, it's different, but it's similar. I mean, a sabbatical would have been a break, I guess, you know, just to give you that mental and, I don't know, seems a waste.
Anyway, his choice.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we should just stop talking about Alistair Cook for England now because I don't see it happening, really.
No, me neither.
There's a bit of talk about Manchester United's summer transfer dealings in the papers as well. They're going to have a bit of a clear out.
Yes. Yes. Six players. Alexis, Herrera's going to be off. Bailly, Valencia. There's a couple more as well. Who was the other one? Darmian.
Potentially Rojo as well. They probably won't let Bailly and Rojo go.
And they're talking about Mata possibly because the wage demands are too high. Mm. There's no doubt Alexis hasn't worked. We know that. And they do need to chase.
Well, that's the big one, isn't it? Alexis, what, $500,000 a week? That's the big one they've got to sort out.
It's the big one in terms of wages. I don't think it'll make any difference to the team because he's already been playing. The big one they have to sort out is finding someone to replace Herrera, in my opinion.
Is that surprised that Herrera's going? I saw some people talking about it.
Money. He's asking for too much money. That's what they're saying.
How can they be asking for too much money from the world's biggest club? You know, a commercial, you know, mega giant. You know, too much money is what? Yeah. What would he be asking for? I don't know. 200,000?
Yeah, but £250,000 a week, which obviously is an obscene amount of money. But I take your point, David. But what happens then is that if he gets it, everyone else wants it.
So he might deserve it. You know, and actually he might get it because of timing. He's out of contract or whatever and, you know, they want to secure him. So, you know, that's how the cookie crumbles at times.
When's that happened to Manchester United before? A player like Herrera, I mean, he's not asking for Alexis Sanchez's wages. No. Someone who's been a mainstay, one of the first names on the team sheet this year, really, to be going because he can't get the money that he wants. It doesn't seem very Manchester United, does it?
There's no doubt that United can afford whatever they ask for, but it's whether they want to be held to ransom. Because if they have 10 players all asking for, say, $100,000 more per week than they're perhaps worth, that's £1 million a week. That's £50 million a year. That is a player that spend money on a player there. And Man United have actually just thinking, you know what, it ain't worth the money to do that. Alexis has upset the whole thing, hasn't he? Let's be fair.
but it's going to cost them money to bring in another player, and this new player, whoever he is, if he's up to Herrera's standard, it's going to be asking for a decent amount of money as well. So they have to factor all that in.
You're right, but I guess they have factored it in. I mean, they are looking at it and going...
Well, I'm not sure they've done the maths, Tony.
No.
No.
Well, didn't know. I would have thought that the Glazers, you know, they are worth quite a lot of money. And part of the reason they're worth a lot of money is they probably don't overspend, I would guess. I mean, listen, if I'm a Man United fan, I'd probably want to keep Herrera. But if you're asking me, would I rather keep Herrera or pay De Gea another £50,000 a week and keep him, I'd have De Gea every time.
Yeah, but they can do both, can't they? Come on, let's be honest. If they want to keep hold of, you know, their best or better players, if they've got to pay a little bit over the odds, I don't think it's a big deal. They can swallow that for a player who's been, been really good for them, terrific for them this season. They could do that. And they're only going to do that, what, 3 or 4 players per season maybe? And if that wage bill goes up incrementally, big deal. They've got more than enough money to cope with that.
You're absolutely right, but they have chosen a different path. Do you know?
Well, look, good luck to him. If he goes to PSG and doubles his money, it'll be, well, I told you so. You know, what can you do? You know, it's up to... I think he's within rights. And I guess if you're a player, you might be saying, well, you know, obviously everyone will be looking at Sanchez and saying, well, he's on that. And I probably only want half that.
Yeah.
And
you're still not giving it to him. That's the problem. And but then first,
that's
first
why he's first. The big problem. Get those wages off the bill and bring everyone a little bit more into line. Love
sports. I just said something to David. I just thought, blooming it. He could win more trophies at international level than he could for his club.
Nations League, yeah.
Nations League and then the Euros and then the World Cup, mate. I'm telling you, getting money on the treble. England are looking good at the moment. Jamie has come in. He's got stories from inside the newspapers. What have you got, Jamie?
Yeah, hard cheese, but cheddar.
What?
There's a story about hard cheese.
Is there?
Yeah.
What about it?
Basically, you might have to be a pork pie smuggler if you want to take British meat into France, Spain.
If we have a no deal Brexit, then you won't be able to smuggle pie. You'll have to smuggle pies in.
It will actually be smuggling. If people tried to take over meat or cheese from Britain into Europe, it'll be known as smuggling.
Right.
Because they said that, you're not allowed to do it.
This is what we've been reduced to. Do you remember, I mean, in the past, because Howard Marks, you know Howard Marks, who wrote, he was an international drug dealer, right? He used to ship large amounts of just marijuana, right?
But
large amounts of it. And he got caught and he got jailed for 10 years. And he had a book called Mr. Nice. Very interesting read.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, we're people are smuggling pies. This is what we have been reduced to.
Yeah.
Pies. Okay.
Any animal-based product, apparently, according to EU officials. And it was suggested to them that what about if we stopped allowing French or Spanish meat, cheese into Britain?
Is this what we did? We're going to have
chorizo. No chorizo.
Yeah. Well, he said, the EU bloke said that eating only British cheese would be a bit of a pity for people in the UK, basically having a go at our cheese.
Well,
you can't beat a bit of cheddar.
Well, you can, though, can't you? There are quite a lot of other cheeses that I actually prefer. And it's not that
this
I don't like cheddar.
This is the scaremongering, isn't it? All the stories now coming out with Brexit looming. Should we not leave because of that?
I mean, what about the cheese room at Tottenham? Is it just going to be one big lump of cheddar?
The cheddar room.
It's going to be called the cheddar room now. Yeah. I mean, we do produce plenty of cheese here, but it's nice to have some foreign cheese.
Yeah, no, I think we will still be able to get stuff in. It'd just be you won't be able to take your... I mean, it's not the end of the world, is it? Just don't put any Scotch eggs in your hand luggage.
If I...
Job done.
If I go abroad, it's not the first thing I'm thinking. I must take, you know, a pie with me.
Right.
You know, I think for 2 weeks I'll eat other food.
We'd get squashed as well, wouldn't it?
I would say it probably would. There's all sorts of issues.
Hard
going
cheese,
on there.
I could understand, because obviously if it gets chucked around on the conveyor belt,
okay,
it would still be all right. It'll soft cheese, no.
Yeah, could be more of a problem.
I don't think it's the end of the world.
No, me neither.
Poor old gardening guru for the BBC, Terry Walton, 73 years old. He may know his way around a garden, how to make tomatoes and all sorts, but he accidentally set fire to his own greenhouse and destroyed his whole crop.
No, how?
Tomatoes, parsnips, onions, all up in flames.
No, dear.
Roasted veg.
true.
I don't like warm tomatoes, I was just thinking that.
See?
Well, he used a paraffin heater to protect it from frost.
All right.
That was the plan.
Well, he's protecting it from frost by setting fire to it.
Yeah.
It's not going to get frosty for a while, is
no,
it?
It's not going to be frosty, no. Unfortunately, it was a bit heavy-handed. Yeah, ended up setting the whole thing alight.
What a shame. Was it just coming to crop, or whatever the phrase is. I don't know. You're from the country. You tell me. You what, grow stuff, didn't you?
What we say.
Yeah.
What we say when it's getting ready. Do you have a harvest home? Do you know what I mean when you have a harvest home?
No.
It's what we have in the country at the end of the harvesting season. Basically, all the produce that didn't get sold, and you have a big old meeting, and everyone eats the wheat and ham and cider, basically. Now it's just an excuse.
And then rolls down the hill.
Rolls down the hill.
Wheat and ham. So it's basically a ham sandwich is what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, it was mostly cider. It's just an excuse for 16-year-olds to drink cider, really.
That's what they do, is it?
Yeah, each village has like a harvest home in a big marquee.
Ah.
Great fun.
We haven't done that in North London.
No, you don't have one in East Finchley, no.
No, we don't, no. Okay, so anyway, poor old Terry Walton, 73. And so what's going to happen? He's not going to starve, is he? He's got other food.
I'm not sure if he had insurance on his tomatoes and parsnips.
I hope he did.
Yeah.
All right.
But don't take advice on heating up your veg from Terry. Even though he's a gardening guru.
Right.
Front page of the Times, there's a story about how to reduce stress levels. This is new advice from doctors. Basically, it says what you need to do is spend 20 to 30 minutes a day in nice surroundings, such as, well, green surroundings, ideally.
Really?
Just buy a tree if you don't want to walk.
Buy a tree. Oh, sorry. Buy a tree. I'll have that one.
Right.
That beach over there.
No, you don't need to
just
go.
Just buy a tree.
Yeah, be by a tree.
Well, or beside it, like hug it, like a tree hugger.
Hug it if you want.
Yeah.
Or sit by it, David, or walk through it. I mean, that's what they're saying.
Walk through a tree.
The general vicinity. I think in football parlance, in and around trees.
Yeah, be in and around.
Okay.
Yeah.
As Andy Townsend would say.
Yeah. Immerse yourself in the countryside.
Really?
20 minutes is optimum time.
Yeah.
After that, it does have its benefits. One, it gets a bit boring. Two, the benefits don't sort of keep going up like they do for the first 20 minutes.
If you spend 10 hours by trees, you're not a lot happier than if you just spent 20 minutes.
Pretty much, yeah.
No, okay.
But you
so it's a bit balanced by the sounds of it,
yeah.
Right?
It would reduce your stress levels by 10%, which actually overall for your overall well-being is quite a lot. So, for example, if you work in St. Paul's, go in that little garden next to St. Paul's for 20 minutes at lunch.
There's no doubt that being in a green space, you know, it's nice. Although my kid's school had what they call a garden of tranquility. And they used to fight in there. They used to arrange punch-ups in the garden of tranquility. It used to make me laugh. I said, you like the garden of tranquility? He said, oh, yeah, we all have a punch-up in there once in a while. Well, that's absolutely hilarious. So it didn't work for the kids?
No.
Not particularly.
I went for one yesterday. I went for a walk with my mate across to Wandsworth Park.
It's nice,
and I felt nice. Then we had a game of crazy golf.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which I comfortably beat him. I'm not a bit of a dab hand at the old
crazy golf.
Yeah,
so I like the windmill. I do like the windmill. That's a good one. Yeah,
I had a couple of holes in one actually.
Did you? How old your kid?
Who's my friend?
It was
friend. Oh, it was your mate. I thought you said with your son.
No.
It was with another adult.
Yes. It does sound unusual to adults.
I took my friend to play crazy golf. He's 43. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, and you felt good.
Yeah.
It wasn't so much a crazy golf, but just walking in the park. It's a lovely thing to do.
Could have just sat indoors, but it took a lot.
It's different. It's nice to get out there.
Get yourself out there.
I did win a coffee machine off him.
Yeah. What, you put a bet on the crazy golf?
Yeah, on a crazy golf, yeah.
You bet a coffee machine?
Well, he had a new coffee machine, and he had one that he was just going to, you know, and I said, well, should we play for the coffee machine?
Right.
And so, a DeLonghi.
Right, that's a nice
and
coffee
I actually,
machine.
I got him to descale it for me, and everything. I just kicked back. It was brilliant.
And what were you going to give him if you lost, just out of interest?
The keys to the Volvo.
That is a nice coffee machine.
I think it's worth less than a coffee machine.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's got a flat tire.
I'm a bit mixed up which is which.
Might be a rubbish Volvo.
Well, yeah, there is. No, they last forever, those things. They do.
This is Love Sport.
Jamie has come in with some more stories from inside the newspapers.
Yeah, a new potential thing to think about for driverless cars. Basically, they were testing Teslas, which have got a driverless car, and they realised that if you put stickers on the road, then the Tesla could potentially change lanes because it thinks it's another lane. White stickers. So if you're driving along, you might not even notice them. But because the Tesla driverless cars are looking at the road so thoroughly, they can spot these stickers and potentially change lanes.
Well, that's a bit worrying.
It is a bit worrying, yeah. Mm-hmm. And Tesla say that if you're using a driverless car, obviously you should still be concentrating on the road. Like Elon Musk said, well, it's not a huge problem because we ask the drivers, even if they're in a driverless car, or the non-drivers, whoever's in the driver's seat, to make sure they're still looking at the road and it's basically autopilot, so it can be corrected by someone who's in control of the stuff.
Yeah, but we then know, don't we, that if you're sitting in there in a driverless car and you're going along, say, for 50 miles and you're not doing much, people will drift off a little bit, won't they?
Exactly, and there has been videos of someone specifically falling asleep while in control of one of these vehicles on a motorway. So, you know, it is a danger, and it is a danger that it's lucky that it's been brought to their attention now, because then they look further into it and they realise that even dirt on the road, anything could potentially...
Dirt, make
the Tesla think that the lane goes somewhere else than it does. And it
this is England. There's a lot of dirt on the road, let me tell you.
There's a lot of dirt on the road.
I sometimes cycle on them, so there's oh, goodness me. It's not in America with those lovely, clean, big highways.
This is a worry, I would suggest.
Yeah.
So, okay, what do they do about it? They just make that... Well, in the end, they just have to make them better, don't they? And less sensitive in that sense.
Yeah, somehow make the Tesla only notice actual road markings rather than dirt and stickers. And
I mean, that's doable, but it's not something that will happen overnight.
No.
I would suggest.
No, and it's lucky that it's been brought to their attention now.
Okay. I certainly wouldn't be the first person to get in a driverless car. Well, I mean, they've already got them, but, you know, I think you sort of... It's a bit like the first person who ever got in a lift. You know what I mean? In an elevator, you think, oh, I'm not sure. I'll wait until a couple of these have gone up and down and not crashed.
Yeah.
And then maybe I'll give it a go. I'll use the stairs.
We had the story yesterday, didn't we? The first man to ever bungee jump. He's part of Oxford University's Dangerous Sports Club.
Didn't test the cord. He tested it by jumping off a ledge 180 foot up.
Yeah.
You know.
And?
He did. Yeah. No, he survived. He's absolutely fine.
Yeah, he's 40 years later now. He's 75.
He's fine. And as I was saying, it could have been the debut and farewell performance of the bungee jumper if it wouldn't have worked out. Anyway, what else you got?
Yeah, coastal towns are being asked to get a bit more creative, being encouraged to have art galleries because they actually do really well for the economy.
They do.
So the likes of Margate and Kent. St. Ives down in Cornwall.
You know what? Those are exactly the two places I was thinking about. Mm. Margate, where I used to go as a kid. And Margate was essentially where poor working class people from London went. If you're from the north, you go to Blackpool. If you're from the south, you go to Margate. And it had a great theme park, which is now called Ben Bomb Brothers, I think. It might be something else. But it wasn't much else. But, of course, Tracy Emin is from down that way, and so the art scene is doing really well. It's really revived that place, and St. Ives has got a Tate.
Yeah, so that, yes. Yeah, they're both doing really well. So the Turner Contemporary in Margate was given 2.7 million by the Arts Council in 2017.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's attracted more than 2.9 million visitors, 68 million for the local economy, and
great.
So it's doing really well. So they're encouraging towns like Blackpool and Scarborough, which are losing popularity, to basically start getting more involved in the art world.
Yeah, Blackpool is grim, is what everyone says. Mm. I mean, I've seen pictures of it, and it looks pretty grim because it used to have all the stag and hen do's, didn't it?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure they're going there as much as they used to. Scarborough's still all right. I went to Scarborough a couple of years ago. It's quite a nice-looking town, I thought.
Yeah, I think people are going less to those sort of places than they were before, though, aren't they?
Cheap seaside holidays abroad.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess
is
what's going on. Mm. But you can bring your pies to Blackpool and Scarborough, as opposed to if you went to Ibiza.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you can take a Scotch egg, no worries, to Scarborough.
I've never had a Scotch egg.
Oh, they're delicious. You never had a Scotch egg?
No, I've never had a Scotch egg.
That is crazy.
No, it's not. Why would I have a Scotch egg?
Well, why wouldn't you have one? You've had a Scotch egg.
I asked first,
It's like saying, "What? I've never had Edam cheese."
Never had that either.
Yes, you have.
Yeah, you're right. Is it like that?
You've just never thought to. I mean, you just happen to have these things, don't you? Either at a picnic or you think, I'll buy that.
Never. Not one.
No. Oh, well, I mean, you're missing out.
With the Jewish upbringing, obviously it's a pork thing. So there was that. But as an adult, I've never thought, I must have a Scotch egg. Don't look that appetising to me.
Well, the corn ones are actually quite nice. The savoury, corn eggs.
Right.
I'll bring a packet in.
No,
you can have your first one.
No.
There's no meat in it.
I don't care. I don't want a Scotch egg at 8 in the morning.
Fine. Suit yourself.
Thank you.
A tailor has got a Bentley. This is a guy who dresses people for Peaky Blinders.
All right.
Doing rather well by all accounts. But he's got a Bentley and he found some footprints on it and some scratches.
Yeah.
And he basically went on social media himself to try and track these perpetrators down.
Yeah.
He thought, he basically saw the shape of the footprint and it was like a Converse, which a lot of the skateboarders who go around his area wear.
Yeah.
So he thought they'd be on his Bentley. So he went on Instagram, typed in Bentley, and then he saw a few pictures, got the name, then went onto their Facebook profile, basically gave all the images to police, and they managed to track the person down
who'd
been,
got him.
Been going on his car.
Is it a him?
Yeah, it was a him.
Oh,
it was a him.
Okay, that's good. I think that is that's the positive, I guess.
Just shows the power of social media.
It does, really. But the tailor's doing well, isn't he, by the way?
He's doing very
My
well.
My grandfather was a tailor.
Was he?
He was.
Did he have a Bentley?
No, he couldn't even drive.
Wait
no,
for him, then.
It was a different time, you know. He was a Jewish man who came, you know, his parents came over from Poland and he set up as a tailor. It was what a lot of people did back in the 20s and 30s.
Right.
Did very well. Taught me how to sew.
Did he?
Yeah. And we used to pick the Paul's numbers as well. Remember when he did the Paul's? We used to put all the numbers in a hat and we picked them out and we put an X in the 8 boxes.
Does that still go on, the Paul's?
I don't know. I haven't done it. I don't know. Don't know. No.
It used to be Little Woods, wasn't it? Little Woods
was the main one. Then there was Zetters as well.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, you could win. It was a smaller prize.
3 points for a score draw, was it?
That sort of stuff. Yeah. If you got 8 draws, you won, you know, about 150 grand.
He could have an alternative career. It was a lot of money back in those days. I was with a physio who left his laptop in the back of his car, stupidly, right? And it got broken into. Laptop was stolen. But he had whatever it's called, spyware. And basically when it opens, it takes a picture of the person who opened it.
Yeah.
Sent to his phone, a bit similar. So he tracked it. He had a tracker on it, tracked the laptop down to a barbershop in the Portsmouth area.
Right.
Went into this barbershop because he had the photo of the face. The man was there. And he was like, rang the police. Police came. And the man said, well, someone just came in. I bought it off them. But the important thing is he actually got it back. So some good little sleuth work.
All right. Well, so it doesn't matter. We've had 20,000 less police on the streets nowadays. We can do it ourselves.
Well, yes.
That's the point you're making. Anyway, let's have a little chat about the racing. The Grand National meeting starts today. The 3-day meeting at Aintree kicks off with a number of top race horses in action whilst the runners for Saturday's big race were announced yesterday. Joining us now is the racing expert and friend of the show, Will Haler. Morning, Will.
Hello, Ian. Hello, Dave.
Yeah, it's good to speak to you. Now, before we talk about a big one, let's focus on the today. Horses like Clandale Aubert and Bristol Demai in the Betway Bowl. It's going to be a good day of action, right?
Yeah, it's a really good start to the meeting. Bouvardair, probably the most famous horse among them, winner of the Champion Hurdle twice. He took a heavy fall at Cheltenham when he was bidding to win the Champion Hurdle for a third time last month, but he's none the worse for that fall. And he's back in action today in the Aintree Hurdle. The 9 horses in the race, and between them, they've won 67 races already between them. So a real top-class lineup.
High-quality lineup. So what else should we look out for today?
Yeah, I mean, there's good racing all across the next 3 days. Over £3 million in prize money, £1 million for the National itself on Saturday. So obviously, when you get that kind of money on offer, you get high-quality horses. We have a race over the Grand National fences on both the first and second days of the meeting. So today, the Fox Hunter Chase, it's a race for amateur riders to have their chance of glory over the Grand National fences. And the horse I like here is a horse called Road to Rome, who led for a long way at Cheltenham last month, got tired close home. He drops back down in trip, but he's a real sound jumper. I think he'll attack these Grand National fences, and I think he'll take a lot of catching in the Fox Hunter Chase.
Right, and of course, the big event is on Saturday, the Grand National. I mean, Tiger Roll's the favourite. I know that Ronnie Wood's horse is not running, which is a little bit of a shame, always had a bit of colour. Who should we look out for in the Grand National?
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about Tiger Roll is that there is a chance he could go off the shortest price favourite for the race in a long,
seven
long time.
7-2.
Red Rum, I think, was the... Say that again.
7-2 is what I'm hearing at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, Red Rum went off, I think Red Rum went off 9-2 or 5-1 in 74, if I remember rightly. And there hasn't been a horse as short as that in the betting for a long time. You think of the Grand National, you usually think that you're going to be getting 10-1, maybe even more about, you know, the favourite or all of the short-priced horses. But Tiger Roll's chance is just so obvious for the race. It really does look that classic case of if he jumps around again like he did last year and if he avoids any trouble in the race, if he can stay on his feet, he really should win. And that's very unusual for a Grand National to be quite so focused around one horse.
Big ifs, though, aren't they? Let's be fair.
Yeah, I mean, the race has fewer fallers than used to be the case 20 or 25 years ago, and that's gonna help his chances a lot. The overall standard of the horse that takes part in the Grand National is higher than used to be the case. you know, a few years ago. And that helps him because you're less likely to get caught up in trouble from other horses. So I think overall, he has got a very, very good chance. But really, you know, if you're talking about backing a horse at 3-1, 3.5-1, Ian, it's not much of a claim to fame. When you go down the pub in the evening and you tell all your mates you back the winner of the Grand National, people aren't going to be that impressed if you say, yeah, I won £6 from a £2. It's not that impressive, is it? So I think people will be looking for longer priced horses on the day.
Well, in terms of longer prices, what's your thoughts on maybe a female jockey winning now? Bryony Frost is out, but Lizzie Kelly, do you think, is there going to be, you know, Rachel, has she got a chance of a winner?
Yeah, we've got two horses with female jockeys this year. Rachel Blackmore riding Val Salido and Lizzie Kelly on T for two. They're both going to be outsiders. They've both got ability. They, you know, on their day, they're both quite smart performers. But whether it will be this year, I don't know. It is just a matter of time until someone does it, and hopefully that time will come sooner rather than later. Katie Walsh is the best female jockey we've had so far in the race.
She's third.
Third on Seabass. So yeah. Hoping we can go better soon.
Thanks, Will. Nice to speak to you. Enjoy your day. That's Will Haler there, horse racing expert and friend of the show. He's at the Aintree, the Grand National Festival. Aintree starts today. There's a sort of odd little statistic in the week that Mike Dean did his 100th sending off.
Yes.
And now it was in one of the papers, Peter Walton, I think it was, who wrote a piece about Mike Dean. It's sort of a Mike Dean tribute, yeah, if you like. It sounds like the worst tribute act in the world. Yes. Mike Dean's turned up and all in the black, all in the referee's gear. I mean, is he good? He doesn't get a lot of love on my Twitter feed, I'll be honest with you. I don't know what you think about him.
No, I haven't got that much love for him. He's very happy, isn't he, with the yellow and the red cards. We know that. They had a highlights reel, I think, of his different mannerisms, a few of his moves, shall we say, when he's, you know, waving play on, for example, or brandishing a card.
Well, Peter Walton said that part of the reason he likes watching him referee is he celebrates when a goal goes in and he's allowed play to go on, given the advantage. He sort of celebrates it like, yes, I had a part in that.
He's giving himself a pat on the back, an assist. Is he getting an assist in that?
Well, to a certain extent, I can admire something like that, because I remember watching the Champions League final in 2006 when Arsenal got beat by Barcelona, and Ronaldinho went through and was taken down. Actually, it wasn't Ronaldinho. Whoever it was got taken down by Jens Lehmann. It ran to Ronaldinho and he scored the goal. But by then, the referee had blown his whistle and he had to send Jens Lehmann off and give the penalty. And it would have been better for him to play advantage and keep 11 against 11 and Barcelona have a 1-0 lead, because that's a better game. So I do admire referees when they play the advantage, and I don't have a problem with them celebrating when they give an advantage either.
No, I think that's good. That's good refereeing. What I would say is I've got a lot of sympathy with the likes. I know people will say, well, he moans a lot, you know, for, say, not getting the right, you know, calls or too many decisions going his wrong way, which I agree. I think in the Premier League, I don't think the officiating is good enough. I think that we need some younger, fitter referees to keep up with play. To me, too many decisions are incorrect, basically because the referees can't keep up with play. I mean, Mike Dean, he's no spring chicken, is he?
He's 50 years old, but he's still pretty fit. And one of the things that Peter Walton did say is that part of the reason he's had 100 sendings off in his career is because he gets to referee some of the big, feisty games. And so it's likely that there'll be some serious tackles flying in. So I understand that. He is a bit showy. Also, when he sends someone off, he says, off you pop to them. I mean, I don't know how you would feel about getting that said to you by a referee.
No, I mean, I have had some referees say some, you know, things which I think are a bit below the belt. You can get some decent
repeatable
ones.
Are they repeatable on the radio?
Yeah, just a bit cheeky and, you know, not...
Like what?
Well, you know, if you don't get a decision, they, you know, blab their lips like you're a crybaby and things like this, you know.
That's quite funny, isn't it?
Graham Pole.
Really?
That was his one, you know, and right. I thought, get lost, you know, I just wanted to give him a volley.
Sure, but you didn't, though, did you?
No, I gave him a volley, yeah, but, you know, that's sort of what he was like. Graham Pole was a bit of arrogant like that.
Yeah, you know? Okay, but I mean, in the end, players do complain a little bit, don't they? And so it's not, a bit of sarcasm's not in the workplace.
No.
I couldn't survive. survive without sarcasm in the workplace.
Yeah, I guess you do have some referees who you get on great with, and you can have a bit of banter with them as well. But Graham Pohl was not like that. I think he actually thought he was a bit better than what he was.
Right.
But you know, so Mike Dean, he's definitely trigger happy. He's like a toaster.
You think so?
His toaster is top pocket.
He
know, just pops up every now and then. You know. So.
Okay. Well, he's 100.
We used to say that to them as well.
Right. You know. You're the toaster. Yeah. All right, Mike the Toaster Dean, as we will now call him on this show.
Love Sport.
Thanks for listening to the Ian Stone Comedy Breakfast Podcast Edition. I'm back every weekday morning, 6:30.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait, and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.